Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to today's Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. So appreciate the opportunity to get together with you on this daily basis and have good conversations. Today, we've got a powerful life change story. We so appreciate the opportunity to hear those testimonies from time to time. And Ted, today's story, this is, I don't think it's often that we've had real life thugs on our show.
Yeah, that's part of the resume of John.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he, I don't think I would have, I wouldn't have been hanging with John or anywhere right. near him.
Yeah, you should say he has changed. That's important to know.
We're hoping that's the case because always I meant no. He has. And we talked to John Turnipseed maybe it's a year and a half ago or so. One of our mutual friends, Steve Johnson with Fivestone Media, has produced a DVD, a film series. Actually, it's a three-part series on John's life, and it's now. They've developed a curriculum that they're sharing in prisons. It's powerful. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But we do want to reference his book called Bloodline, and it came out here not too long ago, and we've got some copies to give away. And I would encourage you to. Just give us a call and sign up for that right away because we'll do a drawing at the end of the hour and you'll want to read his story. And especially if you are in the Minneapolis-St. Paul listening area today, you will want to know about the man who was, he battled childhood demons brought on by a volatile, abusive father. And he tells his story as a man almost without conscience, it seems. And we're going to meet and hear John Turnipseed's story coming up today on Connecting Faith. By the way, our phone number is 877-93-FAITH. That's the way you can connect with us. And John, former gang leader, pimp, drug dealer, is now the director of the Fathering Center at Urban Ventures. And it's a nonprofit that's set in the heart of the same Minneapolis gang territory that John and his family terrorized. And when we say the word terrorized, that's probably pretty accurate. It's a compelling story of overcoming a pretty serious downward spiral. He spent time in prison, had some felony convictions. He's got quite a bloodline, as the title of his book suggests. John, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Hey, thank you for having me. Glad to be back.
You know, John, it's just if people pick up your story or they learn more about you, your life was, kind of the poster child for all the wrong tracks the child could go down. I mean, you had a good family, right? Moved from Alabama up, but then things kind of turned, and by 4 or 5 years old, you were heading down the wrong path. Just give us a little snapshot of when the downward spiral started.
Well, yeah, I was born in Selma, Alabama. I'm 61 years old now. So in 1954, I was born in Selma, Alabama, to a faith-based family, I'm going to call it. I didn't know that people did not go to church every day because that's where we were. That was our entertainment. My father was a deacon in the church. My mother sang in the church choir. The pastor was over our house twice a week, just fellowshipping. Life was really good. And at 7 years of age, 6 years of age in 1964, my father came up here to start a better life for us. And a year later, sent for us. And when we got here, totally different person. This saint, I'm going to call him. And when we were down south, surrounded by families and intact families and going to church and believing in God, this guy had left the church. He even looked different. He had changed his hair to a wavy, processed, I don't know what you want to call it, sort of a pimpish look. He drank. And he also hit my mother. All of this happened. Within a week, I noticed all of this coming up here. And all of a sudden, he went from being the saint and Superman to the devil and a demon to me, to where from the age of 9 to the age of 16, my brothers and I plotted to kill him, but we just were waiting to get strong enough to do it. And from there, I was just raised by the streets. You know, I was angry. My father, my mother was beat up all the time, so she couldn't stop me from hanging out in the streets all night. And I was raised by pimps and drug dealers, and they taught me that pimping and drug dealing and hurting people was okay. At 12 years old, I was doing armed robberies. First sexual experience with a prostitute was at like 11. Just things, just unimaginable, but things that were brought to me in a way that made them seem natural, made them seem okay. Stopped going to church, hated God because he did not answer my prayers of killing my dad. That's what I wanted him to do. And just awful. And from there, getting into gang life, going to juvenile reform school at 14 for robbery and assault, and indicted for manslaughter at 16, on and on and on, and finally ending up in adult prison at 18, and three times I went to adult prison, and in that time just magnified everything evil I'd learned. You know, all the gangs, you know, selling women, drugs, all of it sort of comes together when you have no conscience, when the conscience is put to sleep, and that's done by getting Jesus out of your life and putting the devil in it. And it happens very easily to kids, you know, who just looking for something to hang on to, consistency. And the thugs that raised me were consistent.
Well, I was curious, you know, were you aware that that danger and trouble were kind of, you know, just around the corner? And I know we were just chatting before the show, there's, you know, there's pleasure in sin for a season. And so you were there, this danger, this trouble that was right before you. I mean, 12 years old, you're starting to, you know, do robbery and some of armed robbery, right? I mean, you're carrying around guns. You know, as you work with maybe young adults today, how do you break them of that that hold, that rush that you get from doing bad things?
You know, I just try to relate to them that the people, anyone that you have to keep a secret about is not good for you. Anyone that you can't tell everybody you know about what you're doing with them, that's not good for you. Those same people will in the end utilize you because they don't mean you any good, but you think they do because they act like they love you, but they really just need you. They need your youth and your vulnerability to do things that they don't want to do. I used to hold all the drugs. I would carry the guns. I would go in the stores, do the robberies for some older guys. I didn't know at the time that they were using me. I thought that they really liked me. And because they let me do everything under the sun, especially skipping school, I thought that was pretty neat. I hate it now, you know, that I see other young kids being brought into that. But older people that are into evil will use younger people till they just wear them out. And they believe that they love them. There's no love there. There's absolutely none. So anyone you have to keep a secret about your relationship with, that's the sign that it's not good for you.
You mentioned school, skipping school. Would education have made a difference for you? And if there was a teacher that really believed in you, or and maybe there was, but talk about, you know, education. It just it didn't hold a candle to the fun you were having all night, huh?
Oh, absolutely. As a child, I didn't know. You know, my father had a sixth grade education. My mother about a seventh grade education. No, my father third grade education. My mother seventh grade education. And at the time, I didn't know that what education really meant. The first thing that school does for you is it puts you in a safe environment for 8 to 9 hours. Okay, that's number one, I think. Number two is that it teaches you things that you don't believe that you'll need later on in life, but it's absolutely needed. The learning things that you learn from kindergarten to 12th grade are absolutely essential to even comprehending life. So all those times in school is not just to keep you somewhere safe, it's to teach you years of learning that you're going to need if you're ever going to be successful in this life. And a lot of kids don't know that, you know. A lot of kids think skipping school is pretty neat. No, skipping school is probably the number one thing that puts a kid in danger, because the only thing that's out there for them is somebody that doesn't mean them any good. in some situations. So I hate that I missed school. And I fortunately made all my little brothers go to school. There was something about school that I knew they were safe. And also school, we didn't have any food at home, so sending them to school made sure they ate during the day, and I didn't have to watch out for them. So my little brothers benefited from an education, even though they were brought up in a crazy, dysfunctional house. I made them go to school.
But were they all in your gang? Because you ended up starting a gang, right, which became
pretty... None of my brothers or kids were in any gang that I started.
Okay.
They were in other gangs. In related gangs, but I just couldn't. I knew what I was doing was wrong, and I used other people's kids because I was sending them off into craziness and prison and death. And so I didn't mind if my kids were involved, but it just wasn't going to be with me. So me and my son or my brothers have never did anything except maybe fighting somebody or something like that that was illegal. Because I knew inherently that it was wrong, and I wanted to use other people's kids.
We're going to talk more about John Turnipseed's life and his conscience. As much as he tried to block it out, it stuck with him. We'll talk about how God used a youth pastor in the neighborhood to kind of prick his conscience time and time again. We're hearing John Turnipseed's story. He's written about it in the book Bloodline. You can spend enough time in hell, you get the feeling you belong. That's the subtitle, The True Story of John Turnipseed. And we've got some copies to give away. We'd love to have you sign up for one of those and hear this story of a former gang leader, a pimp, drug dealer, who's now the director of the Fathering Center at Urban Ventures in the Twin Cities area. And we'll hear more about John's story in a moment. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. If you'd like to sign up for a copy of that. There's also a film series, a DVD, films that have been produced on his life, and now a groundbreaking curriculum designed for life-changing transformation that we're going to talk about called Lifeblood. We'll get to that in the moments ahead as well. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Stay tuned for more. That's the story. That's John Turnipseed's story. Thank God. It is a story demonstrating how faith, hope, and forgiveness, backed up by persevering mentors and role models, are essential for real and relevant transformation. And John has told his story powerfully in the book Bloodline. He's with us today. John spent, a number of years as a gang leader, a pimp, and a drug dealer, and is now... He was the director of the center, the Fathering Center at Urban Ventures in Minneapolis. Now he's vice president and has overcome the deadly effects of a violent, absent father and the downward spiral of gang life. John, I want to talk a little bit more as we talk about your story. Anger and violence seemed like that was your life for many years. Just say more about the... violence. Did you ever consider that there'd be other ways to maybe solve problems besides violence?
No. To me, I seen that violence made your problems sort of go away at times. I lived in a violent surroundings where people took advantage of people. There were pedophiles and guerrilla pimps that would take women from you or take things from you. There were guys that would rob you. And so I lived in a community where everything was settled with violence. And the angrier you were, the more angry you were, and the more you demonstrated it, got you more rank and stuff. And, of course, murder was the highest honor that you could get in this community. That's how crazy it was. And so you had to protect yourself all the time. It actually was a miserable existence. And so I just stayed angry all the time, mainly because I was scared half the time. A lot of these guys play tough, but, man, going into a new prison and strangers coming up to you, craziness coming up to you, surrounding you, being in environments where there's two or three guys with pistols that don't like you, all that kind of stuff, man, that ain't glamorous. Yeah. It's terrifying, but you just hold up that front. So I was angry at my father. I was angry because nobody came to help. I was angry at God because I prayed a lot. I prayed for a couple of years and no answer, you know, that I thought, you know, although today I know there was an answer, but I didn't recognize it at the time. And, man, I was angry at everybody. So I was that kid. They thought I was nutty. They thought I was just, don't mess with him. There's something wrong with him. There was.
Did you see the inconsistency in your views of justice or injustice? I mean, it was okay for you to rob and beat others, but if something, you know, somebody took something of yours, I mean, you became even that much more angry and upset.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of times when you hear about gang shootings and things of that nature, you think it's over turf and things like that. It's really over what we feel was an injustice. You did something to us. You took something from us. You violated us in a wrong way. You know, you slapped my sister. You robbed my house. A lot of those shootings and killings are over what we perceived as an injustice. You know, it was okay to rob you, but heaven forbid if somebody robbed me because, you know, I wanted to kill your whole family. You know, but I, on a consistent basis, laugh at people that got robbed. I don't know how to reconcile that, but that's the truth.
You know, it's we'll get to. I think we need to hear more of the story, and then get to, you know, how do you encourage others? I guess to see clearly when you know, their minds are kind of clouded with this, you know, sense of self-righteous injustice. But there was a youth pastor in the neighborhood who befriended you, and you know, for those in the Minneapolis area, you know that he's gone on to become one of the major influences in the Twin Cities and the country regarding urban ministry. So talk to us about your friend Art, who you didn't want as a friend for many years.
Art Erickson was a guy, one of the only white guys in the neighborhood, or the only white guy that would associate with us, really. You know, there were others, but not at his level. He would come to the parks. He'd be at the school. He had a food shelf. He helped people everywhere we went. He'd try to show up, you know. And he knew everybody's name and would always speak to people. But I was involved in a criminal lifestyle, and I knew that involvement with him meant that he would talk to me about things that I knew were right, and I didn't want to talk to him. So all my brothers knew him, my mom knew him, all my cousins knew him, and, you know, they would talk to him. But I was so involved in a criminal lifestyle, you know, in my young teens, that it was like, no way. I don't want nothing to do with you, you know. I didn't see him as a bad person. I seen him as a person that would disrupt. It would sort of make me feel, every time I seen him, I felt guilty about some of the things I was doing. So I stayed the heck away from him. That's what I did.
He comes back in the story after a while. But you mentioned your mom, your cousins, your brothers. I mean, you literally, the title of your book, Bloodline, there's something to be said for that, right? Because your entire family, right, kind of followed your path, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know, my son and some first cousins and nephews, and they banded together, and with the help of some of the older criminals in my family, my dad was the first one in our family to go to jail, and I was the second. So sort of just following our lead, and some of my older cousins, you know, they formed the Rolling 30s Blood Street Gang, which was all family. I was an advisor to it, so were all my cousins. You know, it was sort of like consultants and help them get guns and help them do things that they shouldn't have been doing. I'm not proud of it at all. And because of that, I have reaped tremendously some bad, bad, bad stuff, you know, just horrible stuff. I've gotten back twice the evil that I put out there. And it's one of the biggest regrets that I have in my life, the character that I showed my family and friends, of Johnny, you know, the evil in me.
the scriptures are true about that, don't they? That evil can pass down from generation to generation unless it's stopped. Yeah.
Absolutely. But the great thing about it is it can stop also.
And then we want to hear more about that transformation coming up here in a moment, talking with John Turnipseed. You were working with, thinking the word that caught my attention was consultant. That's probably not the kind of consultant that we normally think of. But, I mean, you had a pretty successful business, didn't you, in terms of, money. There was prostitution, there was drugs, there were guns, there was crime. I mean, you were neck deep into it, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. A criminal lifestyle, when you get involved with it, it involves a lot of people don't take all the negative titles that are associated with them, but 99% of the gangs out there are involved in prostitution. That moves to drugs, so if you can't be a successful drug ring without prostitutes bringing in money. So you incorporate prostitutes in your drug business. So most drug dealers are actually pimps also. They don't claim that. But it's a very integral part of the business, and most of them are accessory to murder. Anytime you'll have a gang meeting and you'll talk about defending your turf and all that, you're building up an army to kill someone. So a lot of these kids don't realize that you're, when one of your fellow gang members kills somebody, you're an accessory to murder. And fortunately for them, the police don't prosecute it like that because it's too much time, it's too time consuming. But just belonging to a gang, you are justifying everything that the gang does, whether you like it or not. You're a pimp, you're a gang member, you're a murderer, and all kinds of other things that you won't get into.
Johnny, what was your view of women? I mean, you had multiple relationships, from age 12 on or so. I mean, did you care about women?
No. I have a hard time saying it's hard. How can you say you care about someone that you would have selling their body? That doesn't make sense. So, the nice thing to say is, of course I cared about women. My mother was a woman. No, I had no reverence for women whatsoever. I didn't, I was disgusting. I wouldn't want me to be with my daughter. At that time, I would have did something violent to me, a guy like me, if they would have tried to be involved with my daughter.
Well, we've spent the first half of the show reviewing the depths, the downward spiral of John Turnipseed's life. The good news is that it turns around. There is transformation and powerful change taking place. We're going to talk about the transformation of God at work in John Turnipseed's life in the second half of today's program. I encourage you to stay tuned for that. You can also sign up for a copy of his story in the book Bloodline. We've got three copies to give away. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Also going to talk a little bit about a new curriculum out to help those in prison with the life change and the work of Five Stone Media. All that coming up in the second portion of today's Connecting Faith. John Turnipseed, my guest today. John Turnipseed's story is one that song speaks to. He is a new man in Christ. The former gang leader and a drug dealer. He's a community leader, a pastor, a speaker, and has written parenting curriculum for more than 15 years. John was the director of the Center for Fathering at Urban Ventures in Minneapolis. He was promoted to vice president just a year or so ago, overcoming the deadly effects of a violent, absent father and the downward spiral of gang life. John's passionate about helping rebuild relationships and successful living. His story is told powerfully in his book Bloodline. He was a thug. John, there came a time though when it started falling apart. You spent some time from juvenile to prison to to prison and felony convictions. Give us a little sense of when the tide started turning for you.
Well, the tide started turning for me. I'm 61, like I said. I started when I was like 11. And so I was 40 years old. And a bunch of things happened. My son, Lil Johnny, had been shot his leg off. They tried to execute him. He left him for dead. And I was in jail, and I couldn't help him. I didn't think I'd ever see him again, and he had gotten shot. I had been charged with 50 felonies, and they were getting ready to send me to prison for 30 to 40 years. And just all of that stuff just, you know, I'd already had one son beaten to death when he was 3 years old. You know, I had one son I didn't know about that had been abused and mistreated and just treated really badly. And I'd lost the respect and love of my kids. You know, my mother was just very not ashamed of me, but just in pain about me. You know, and my father had died, even though I didn't have a good relationship with him. You know, he was gone, and I was suicidal. And I got profiled on a TV show as being this criminal. Tom Lydon, Channel 9 News, did that. And I just got on my knees and asked God. I just thought that maybe if this God thing was true, it had to happen right then, because I'd have probably killed myself. And it happened. I can't explain what he said to me, how he said it to me. All I know is I got off of that floor after an hour of crying like a baby, barricaded in the office, and walked out of that office, dusting my clothes off and smiling. People thought I went crazy. I was smiling, and I knew that God had came. And thank God for my grandmother and my mom instilling that into me when I was 5 years old, and I used it when I needed it the most.
John, there were, you know, after prison, I mean, you were kind of in and out of prison for a few times, but you had some chances to go straight, be productive, contribute, but you fell back in your own lifestyle a few times, hurt some people that took chances on you. Talk about how you felt during those times, and what would you say to others that, you know, maybe would be skeptical to take a chance on a guy like you?
Well, you know, the first thing I'll say that, you know, a lot of people think that it only takes one person to turn a person around. No, it takes many touches. And some of the people that touched me in my life, you know, all of that touching came back, and that gave me the strength and energy to pull myself out of it. You know, guys like a college professor named Dan Taylor, who talked me into going back to school, and only went back to school because this guy would visit me in prison, and I felt like I should at least do something. I just did it to please him. You know, I mean, it sounds crazy, but, you know, he was coming to see me in prison, wanted me to go to school. So I went to school, and if it wouldn't be for going to school, I would not be where I am today. So God has sent angels along the way to walk me through this journey, you know, and there were other angels that, you know, came my way. And he kept art in my life for 40 years, you know. So I just benefited. But what I want people to know is that people don't intentionally try to hurt you if they go back to their old life. And a lot of times, most of the times, out of respect, you won't even see us again when we fall because we're ashamed, okay? And you're not in any danger or anything because we care that you are a person that cared about us, and we just feel bad that we disappointed you. So it's always a good risk and a good gamble to invest in someone that's gone astray. It really is, and it's safe. It is rewarding, but you got to remember that you might not be the final touch, and you might not see the results of your work for 10 or 15 years, but you will see it.
Tell me about, when you have opportunity to speak to maybe going into prisons or talk with gang members, what message most connects with them, or what's the word you want to get across?
The thing that most connects to them is, see, I know and they know the truth, that they were not born to be where they are. I and they know that they inherently, they're not bad people. They've chosen to do bad things, and it's intoxicating and addicting. And a lot of times they know, and I know, that they just need some help and a little belief to come out of the hole that they're in, that they dug for themselves. And most of them, the only reason they go back to their former lifestyle is because they don't know Jesus. They don't know the saving grace of Jesus Christ that can talk to them at 3 in the morning when man might not understand, you know. The ones that do figure that out, man, it's it's great to behold. But the guys I talk to, I can speak the truth to them. They know that gang banging and temping and all that kind of stuff is crazy and that we ain't supposed to be doing it. And they know most of them, most gang members are actually, I don't want to call them cowards. I don't know, you know, bullies. Yeah, that's a good word, you know. And only because they've got 4 or 5 other guys are they treating people like they're treating them. They know that they were not built to do that. And they know that. And deep down inside, there's a guilt button. If you can touch it, they'll admit it and come out of it. So we knew we were doing wrong. You don't have to convince us that we were doing wrong. But we hate hearing it from people that haven't experienced it. We'd rather hear it from people that experienced it and had success in their life. So that's why I go into prisons. Talk to me. I go to talk to me.
And you see yourself in so many of these young guys. You directed the Fathering Center at Urban Ventures for a number of years. I mean, fatherlessness is one of the key issues across urban America, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, fathers are abandoning their kids at an alarming rate, you know, and it's become okay. It's not okay to let a kid walk alone. You know, when that father leaves you, you like lost half your army. You know, all of a sudden you're competing in a world with a half an army. And there's the things that you should learn from your father that you don't learn. So it actually cripples you emotionally. So fathers got to know that we are important in the lives of our children. And we're not just an extra person. We are their dad. And in every kid, there's a hole the size of a father if their father has left them. And every kid, I guarantee you, I talk to prisoners and stuff. And on Father's Day, we don't send Father's Day cards out because the fathers have left. But Mother's Day is a glorious day in prison, you know. So fathers, return home. Come back home, that's what I would say.
You, you know, as a father and, you know, have left a legacy that, you know, was not one of your, that you would have chosen as you look back on it now. I mean, God has redeemed it. Say a word about, has there been a turn in the turnip seed family?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Affecting my life and the life of my kids, my family, my immediate family, my kids have gotten off welfare. It used to be all of my family, immediate family, and all of my kids and my brothers, we would all have some reach into welfare. We have gotten off of it. We are my brothers are all working, taking care of themselves. My kids, you know, are off welfare. My grandchildren, I got 23 of them, so I got 20 of them are not on welfare. That's huge in my family. And I got about 14, 15 honor roll kids in my family, which there used to be none. You know, so the tide has changed. We're not costing the state of Minnesota millions of dollars anymore. You know, we're a productive family, and it's going to get better. You know, this next generation, I just hope I live long enough to see all these high school and college graduates that never will be in the family gang that we started.
Was it just on the strength of your testimony your family and those that you've influenced have said, yeah, I can see the change. I remember the old Johnny, and I like the new one better, and he's given me if he can do it, I can do it.
Absolutely. Our family, we were born into a faith-based Christian family and stuff. That's our roots. And all I did was remind them of their roots, you know. And more importantly, act accordingly, you know. And everybody in my family knows that we are a Christian family. We should have been all the way, but we lost our way for a while. But we are important in the life of our families. We've got 1,000 members in the state of Minnesota, and all of them need to believe in Christ, and we're preaching that from a lot of different places. We go to two or three different churches in the community, and the ones that ain't a part of the church community, we're reminding them of it all the time. It's not just me. You know, there's been a number that's given their life to Christ, and we meet together once a month. We talk about, now it's not gang stuff, it's God stuff. And we're going to, you know, with God, we're going to win this. We're going to win this.
Say a word about Urban Ventures. I mean, but some 20-plus years ago, planted roots in this, you know, basically in your hood, right? And said, we're going to kind of take back this part of the city. Talk about the need for ministries to be willing to kind of put down roots and to reclaim some territory.
Absolutely. Urban Ventures is like a Catholic parish. They took this parish, and this is our territory. And because of that, we've eliminated a lot of things in our community. You don't see prostitutes walking up and down a famous prostitution strip that I used to manage called Crack Alley. We've eliminated that. Most of the new residents here don't even know that used to be gang-infested shootings every day and prostitution and drug dealing on our corners. We do street patrol. We have a safe place for kids to come. We are the number one place in Minneapolis for kids to come. And people coming out of prison, you know, we do everything from 5 years of age for kids, sports programs, music programs, and most importantly, we have Jesus incorporated into our teachings and learnings and stuff so that kids can learn right away, can get rooted right away in the thing that is most important in their life, is a spiritual relationship with our Lord and Savior. So we are here, the Fathering Center. We help people get jobs. We've been very successful with helping people get jobs. There's employers that get it. They understand that you don't want a potential thief walking around unemployed. You want him working. You know, I want every potential thief I know or past thief working a job and getting their own money so they don't have to steal mine and stuff. But most importantly, I want them to know Jesus, and he'll keep them working.
Yeah. John Turnipseed is my guest today. We're talking about his story and his legacy. The book that he's written about is called Bloodline. It tells the true story of John Turnipseed. And we've got some copies to give away at 877-93-FAITH. There's also a series of films on the Turnipseed story, the Turnipseed trilogy. And there's a new curriculum that is designed for life-changing transformation that is going into prisons and a number of other areas where it's being used. We'll talk about that in a moment. By the way, if you want to find out about the good work of the Fathering Center and the work of Urban Ventures, you can go to urbanventures.org. urbanventures.org, and then we'll tell you about the opportunity through this new film series at Five Stone Media, fivestonemedia.com, and we'll get to that and more in just a minute as we talk more with John Turnipseed. Story of transformation. It's a story of faith, hope, and forgiveness, and the mentors, and a lot of touches along the way. As John Turnipseed has said, he's told a story in the book Bloodline. There's also a three video film series in the Turnipseed trilogy, as well as the most recent, the Lifeblood curriculum. It's a 12-part video curriculum being taken into prisons and halfway houses, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But speaking of films, John, I'm wondering, do you think, does Hollywood perpetuate and maybe inspire kids to get into gang violence, or they glamorize it? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, Hollywood has done some great, I'm going to call it injustice in our community. Scarface was one of the most damaging films ever, if I can mention a film, I'm sorry. Scarface really damaged the African-American community. You can look around and see Scarface T-shirts and everything. And what that stands for is a person that says, I'm going to live and die doing, I'm going to make as much money as I can, do as much destruction as I can and stuff, and I don't care what the consequences are. And Scarface, say hello to my little friend type stuff, is the merchandise is sold all over my community and stuff. I can't get kids away from that. You don't have to go to school. You don't have to be anything. There's been some other movies that were notoriously bad for our community, and And on the internet, you can find just stuff that just glamorizes this lifestyle of killing people and harming people. And it's just, I don't know why we even allow it. But I guess freedom of speech, you know, it sort of comes with that. But we're being hurt.
You've shared your story powerfully in three films, the Turn of the Sea trilogy from Five Stone Media. Just say a word about that. And kind of exciting to see how God has used these films in pretty powerful ways.
Yes, absolutely. And what we wanted to show, we were looking for African-American men being spotlighted in movies that came from a bad past and ended up good, you know. And my past, in the last 21 years, has been gloriously good. I mean, I don't deserve all the great things that have happened to me. I only know because Jesus has shown me favor that things, I can't believe my life, but it's absolutely can be done, you know, by other people. You know, they can have the same successes in their life. Might not look the same, but the feelings will be the same. And we wanted to show someone winning through Christ, and that's what my film is about. And as you know, boys of color can especially resonate with it because, you know, it shows that you too can be a part of America and part of this dream, you know, that is living a good life and staying out of jail.
And now there's the 12-part video, the Lifeblood Curriculum. Say more about that.
The Lifeblood Curriculum was, we sat down and I wanted to talk about things like loyalty and family and honesty and the things that come along with that in a way that people that came from my lifestyle or at risk could really understand, you know, talk about things and show you people, nine other people that have changed their life also. So it's not just John Turnipseed and speaking to your life. So I recommend it for kids, high school kids in general, and people coming out of prison and people at risk of going to prison. It's just, I think it's a great piece of work, but that's me. I put a lot of work into it.
Well, it's going into prisons and halfway houses and a lot of opportunities to expand it for youth and high school and college age. And you can find out more about that at fivestonemedia.com. Fivestonemedia.com is probably the easiest place to go to find out about that. John, we're going to break away and do a story from Angel Tree in just a moment. But obviously, you've been in prison. You know about programs like the Value of Prison Fellowship and Angel Tree. Say a word about that.
Hey, Prison Fellowship. A good friend of mine, Al Quie, really is involved with that. And Prison Fellowship is doing some stuff that's off the chain. I mean that they're reaching out to prisons. That's their main focus, is to restore the lives of people that have been harmed the most by their own doings and stuff. And I just applaud them. And Angel Tree, that gives – Christmas is a very depressing time, especially when, you know, not all inmates are created equal, but Angel Tree sort of levels the playing field where all inmates can send their kid a message of love and hope. You know, it's great, man. I really applaud, you know. I don't know how they raise money for it or anything, because it's sort of hard to raise money that directly benefits prisoners. But these guys have figured out how to do that, and it's a blessing. Trust me, there's some prisoners that at this time of year, they need something like this, man. They need loving people that are dedicated to helping them. So big ups to Prison Fellowship and Angel Tree.
Good. John, thank you for sharing your story. Do you get tired of telling it?
Nope, because there's a reason behind it. There's a, you know, it's like, do you get tired of depositing money in the bank? No.
Well, John, thank you for so powerfully sharing your story and reminding us today that there's hope and forgiveness and transformation, and you're a living testimony of it. So God bless you as you continue to work and minister in the urban communities.
Thank you, sir.
John Turnipseed joining us today, a former gang leader, drug dealer, community leader, and pastor and speaker now. You can read about his life story in the book Bloodline, or you can find out more of the Turnipseed trilogies at Five Stone Media. And as you heard John say, you know, Angel Tree is an important ministry, especially this time of year. And we are honored to be able to partner with Prison Fellowship, looking to see 1,200 children reached. So far, just about 400 of those 1,200 have been reached thanks to your generosity. $73 will help reach five children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their parent in prison. And we want to hear Antonio and Alicia's story right now as a reminder how to get involved.
The most passionate Angel Tree volunteers are those who have themselves been rescued. Do you know what it's like to absolutely hit bottom? Antonio remembers.
When I was incarcerated, my children felt like Daddy left them. Daddy didn't care about them. They were left back with their mom struggling because I cared more about drugs than I did about them.
Back home, Alicia wanted and expected nothing from Antonio. This was his fourth time back in prison, and she thought no power on earth could save him.
If you'd have known him 10 years ago, you wouldn't want to be in the same room with him. He was a very scary person. He was very violent and very selfish. And when God broke him, he broke him.
God visited Stateville cell T-235.
God came when I was in prison in Stateville in cell T-235. It was the first time that I met Jesus Christ. As soon as I got a taste of Jesus, that sweet, sweet taste of Jesus, is when I began just trying to serve the Lord. It's not about me at all anymore. It's about Jesus. It's about my wife. It's about my children.
Antonio and Alicia know desperation, but they also know restoration. Their pastor asked them to head up Angel Tree for their church. That first year, they stretched their resources and decided their little church in the middle of a crime-ridden, drug-infested neighborhood could reach out to 10 children.
We asked for 10 children's names, and we got them. And I was just curious at how many more children there were that weren't taken. And I was told that there were 75 other children that were on the list for Angel Tree, and no church had taken them.
We can celebrate 10 children being remembered, but we can't ignore 75 children denied. For Antonio, it was especially troubling. He knows what Angel Tree means to an incarcerated parent.
That's a very big thing in prison, to be able to fill out the application in hopes that some kind person, they're going to give from their heart. And that gift is not coming from them. It's addressed with my name on it. And Angel Tree is a worthy cause.
Will you partner with Alicia and Antonio in this worthy cause? Can you help bring Christmas and the sweet love of Jesus to one or two Angel Tree kids?
Well, maybe you could do 10. $146 will help reach 10 children. $73 will reach five children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their parent in prison. But you choose the amount and get involved. You can give online at our website, myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Or you can call this toll-free number. It's 855-59-ANGEL. That's 855-592-6435. 855-592-6435. Thank you for your generosity. You may be able to reach someone, someone's family of a John Turnipseed who might be just languishing in prison and wondering, is God actually real and can he turn his life around? You could be part of that process. Thank you for your generosity and partnering with us. Again, just about 400 children have been reached so far just through our friends all across the Faith Radio Network. So let's continue moving forward. We'd like to see 1,200 reached here by Christmas time.
Did you have an update on where we're at right now?
Yeah, just under 400.
Oh, you said
so,
okay.
Yeah,
right.
So we're great progress. Thank you for your generosity. Again, consider whatever the amount you can give today at 855-59-ANGEL or online at myfaithradio.com. If you missed a part of today's program with John Turnipseed, his powerful story, want to listen to it again, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and we post the interviews there after the show. And it's also something you can pass on to a friend, too. Maybe you know someone who needs to hear that, to be encouraged. You can be a radio missionary for us, tell others about all the great resources available at myfaithradio.com. And thank you for listening for Connecting Faith.